All right, if you would, grab your Bibles and let's be turning over to Ephesians chapter 5. I've mentioned this before. I really enjoy fruit, which used to cause Daryl a bit of grief. For those who are new, Daryl, he was our janitor slash maintenance man before COVID, and he was very meticulous. You see, I will be eating it in my office while I'm studying, and then I just throw the peel or the core in the trash behind me and forget it. I did that while I was studying for this sermon. And this causes smells and fruit flies and other insects, which Daryl had to deal with, and he made sure that I was very aware of that. And I know some of you through the years, you've given me tips and tricks how to get rid of those fruit flies, but I always forget. I think I'm just going to start considering them to be pets, maybe even giving them names. There's Sergeant Flutter and Buzz Lightyear. Oh, and hey, there goes Marty McFly. Well, the word fruit is used quite a bit in the Bible. And so before we start, I'd like to say a few things about it. Now, the main word in the Old Testament, it's used more than 100 times, and the main word for fruit in the New Testament is used, well, it's used over 60. All right, so what is fruit? Well, of course, it's the edible pulp surrounding the seed or seeds of many different plants and trees. It's a really good source of vitamin C, vitamin A, and fiber. There are probably many of you who need to be eating more of it, but this isn't a nutrition course. Now, sometimes the word is used literally in the Bible, but the majority of the time, it's used metaphorically. It's used for the fruit of the womb, the offspring of animals and humans. Well, it's used for the reward or the consequences of our actions and deeds. The bulk of the time, though, it's used for the natural product that comes from something being what it is. An apple tree just naturally produces apples. An orange tree naturally produces oranges. In Matthew chapter 7, Jesus, he said, "Beware of the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles, are they? So every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot produce bad fruit, nor can a bad tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then you will know them by their fruits." And you'll also remember the passage in John chapter 15 where Jesus described God as the divine gardener, the vine dresser who looks for fruit on the branches connected to the true vine, Jesus Christ. Well, we are those branches. And he said the branches that produce fruit, well, they would be pruned so they could produce more fruit. But the branches that did not produce fruit or that did not stay connected to the vine, he said they would be taken away and thrown into the fire. Some people today, they offer what you might call a discounted gospel. You know, you get your ticket punched by the blood of the Lamb, and then you can live any way you want. But as we can see from so many passages, that's not true. God cares about the fruit we produce. And so this week and the next, we're going to be looking at this section here in Ephesians 5. And my desire is for us to come away understanding the kind of fruit we need to be bearing now as Christians, and the importance of it. So in this chapter, Paul, he contrasted what we were with what we are now. And he showed the unfruitful deeds of darkness, as he called them in verse 11, next to the fruit of the light. He could have called it fruit of darkness, but instead he called it unfruitful. It doesn't produce anything worthwhile. All right, so let's just begin by reading through our text. "But immorality or any impurity or greed must not even be named among you, as is proper among saints. And there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater as an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with them, for you were formerly darkness. So, you started with the lifestyle in verses 3 and 4. Verse 3 is the walk. Now, saints or holy ones, that is just a term referring to Christians, not the football team. And nor is it an elite group of very religious dead people. You hear people say, well, hey, you know, I'm no saint. Well, if you're a Christian, according to the Bible, you are a saint. And so it stands to reason, if we're going by that moniker, holy ones, we're not to be involved in unholy behavior. So we've been sanctified, that is, set apart by God, put in a special place. He said these things are not to be named among us. Now, this is not talking about actually naming them, or we couldn't read the scriptures out loud. I think the NIV, they got it right. There must not be a hint of. In other words, the world should not be able to point a finger, you know, to point to these things in Christians. Christians are supposed to be above reproach in these areas. Sadly, as you know, that is not always the case. And non-Christians, boy, they get a kick out of pointing that out. So-and-so says he's a Christian, but he does this or that. See, I told you. All Christians are hypocrites. I told you. Well, the first thing is immorality. And this comes from the Greek word porneia. We get our word pornography from it. And it's an umbrella term, and it includes any illicit sexual activity and behavior that is outside of marriage, which takes many different forms. Roman society, right, it was filled with sexual immorality of every kind. In Ephesus, it was no exception. The Temple of Diana, all right, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world that they had there. It was known far and wide for its hundreds of priestesses, which were actually sacred prostitutes. So imagine what it might be like growing up in a place that's over-sexualized and just saturated with sexual perversion. Oh, wait, we don't have to imagine it. Like them, our culture is also becoming a very, very immoral, sex-obsessed culture. I read about a mandatory school assembly at Boulder High Schools a few years ago where the speaker said this. Now, keep in mind, these are teenagers. Many of them can't even drive yet. We know you are going to have sex. We know that you are going to experiment and explore your sexuality. We know you are going to take drugs. So let's figure out a way so that you can do these things and not kill yourself in the process. That's the culture we live in. That's the kind of stuff our kids hear from the world. And it's actually gotten worse since then. Look, God created sexuality, not Hollywood. And it is a beautiful thing when it's practiced in the context God intended within the lifetime commitment of a husband and wife. Oh, surely it's not that big of a deal. Okay. Surely God doesn't care that much. Now, if I could raise one eyebrow really high like Spock, I'd be doing that right now. Hebrews 13:4. Marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. Besides being displeasing to God, well, it can cause all kinds of problems. For example, okay, how many Christians have we seen through the years who have just made a mess, just damaged or destroyed their marriages with an affair? In our marriage seminar, it's what we had last month, they gave some really good advice on affair-proofing your marriage. If you missed that, we have a copy of the DVDs that you can check out. All right, next he said, any impurity. Now, impurity could also be translated as uncleanness. It just has to do with our morals. These would be any activities that God disapproves of, make us unclean in his sight. And you notice that he said any. There are some just long lists of sins in passages like Romans 1, Galatians 5, 1 Timothy chapter 1. They fall into this. And see, some of these things, they're things that are created to be used in a certain area, like sex. But we've messed it up. We've misused it. We've polluted it for our own personal gratification outside of the guidelines which God has given us, or the purpose for which he created them. And we can clearly see what happens to a society when they have given themselves over to these things. And then greed or covetousness, well, this is the excessive desire to acquire and possess more, never being satisfied with what you have. It's the greedy desire to have and to hold as many possessions, just as much wealth as possible. And they think that they'll be satisfied if they just have more. Well, I'll be satisfied if I have this salary, live in this neighborhood, etc. But they won't. Now, you can find articles and you can find books, you can find websites. They will try, some will actually try to argue that greed is a good thing, but not the Bible. All right, so what's wrong with it? Well, besides the fact that we're never content, which is a biblical virtue, it can lead to the use of unlawful or underhanded means to obtain it. It can lead to someone putting their hope and trust in money instead of God. And it can lead to jealousy, because we're always comparing ourselves to others. You may have heard of this interesting way that Eskimos kill wolves. Now, I don't know if it's true. And a lot of different ideas about it on the internet, also known as the worldwide rumor mill. Okay, so what they do, supposedly, is they get a really, really sharp knife, and they cover it in blood, and they let it freeze. And then they'll put another coat of blood, let it freeze, and they'll do that until they have something of a blood popsicle, if you will. And then they mount it somewhere out in the woods. Well, when a wolf smells blood, it kind of makes it irrational. And it kind of, you know, sometimes it'll go into a frenzy. And so a wolf will come by and it'll start licking it. It'll start licking the frozen blood knife. And in the process, it will cut its tongue without knowing it. Maybe from the cold numbing it. And so the wolf thinks that it's getting a really good meal. But it's actually drinking its own blood. And it keeps drinking, it keeps licking and licking, and it's unable to distinguish its own blood from the blood on the knife. In its greed for blood, the wolf will eventually bleed to death or just get so weak that the other wolves attack and eat it. That is often what happens with greed for money or possessions. In our frenzy, we don't realize it, but our greed is actually hurting us and damaging us in the process. All right, so verse 3 is, that's the walk. Verse 4 is the talk. Now, remember when you were a kid and you'd go to the doctor and he or she would tell you to stick out your tongue? Well, apparently, they can tell a lot about a person by your tongue and what's in your mouth. Well, in a similar way, you can tell a lot about a person from the way they use their tongue, how they talk. Paul said that these things, they're not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. With our hearts and our lips full of thanksgiving, I'd say it's pretty hard for this kind of talk to get out. Now, among other things, it reminds us of who we are in a relationship with God. Now, if you're not used to doing this, I would recommend or encourage you to practice what I teach my children. So every night, before you go to sleep, make sure in your prayers to thank God for three things. That'll help to get you in the habit. But you will notice that in our movies and our TV programs these days are often filled with these things in verse 4. It's very easy to just adopt the language of our culture without thinking about it, without thinking what it means and what we're actually saying. And that's why I personally recommend people use VidAngel when streaming their movies and shows. Yes, my family is going to hear it out in the world, but they don't have to hear it in my home. Well, the word for filthiness here is defined as obscenity, nastiness, deformed, and disgusting speech. So this is gutter language. and cuss words. Silly or foolish talk, now that's speaking of senseless and stupid remarks, all right? Things like racial slurs and overgeneralizations. Some people fall into this when they talk about politics. Christian speech is to be dignified. It's to be coming from a place of wisdom, not off-the-cuff, knee-jerk comments and off-color remarks. So we need to think about what we are saying before we say it. And this is something I think we all struggle with. And coarse jesting, this is not talking about clean jokes and witty exchanges. There's nothing wrong with that. Some of you like telling those dad jokes. No, the word here, it literally means easily turned. It's talking about something that's good. You've taken something good and turned it into something dirty. It's locker room type of jokes. Much of the stuff we get these days from the comedians. Stuff that's just rude, crude, and lewd. Well, he said that these are not fitting. So these six things from verses 3 and 4, for the Christian should be like shoes that do not fit, or like gloves that do not fit. There's a picture from O.J. Simpson's trial where he was desperately trying to make it look like it didn't fit. Paul continued with the outcome of these unfruitful deeds of darkness in verses 5 and 6. All right, so first, no inheritance in the kingdom. He said that we know this with certainty. So this belongs to the ABCs of Christianity. Right? This is kind of like a duh. And it's similar, okay, this is similar to the passage in 1 Corinthians 6 that Phil Robertson quoted a few years ago to GQ. It caused such a big stink. Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor those habitually drunk, nor verbal abusers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. Now, according to our passage, all right, a covetous person is a what? Well, he's just like a pagan idolater. He worships gold instead of God. And as you know, just about anything has the potential to become our God, take God's place, become our idol. And you remember what Jesus said in Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. That's the Aramaic word for riches. Well, the sad irony is that a greedy person, well, they want more and more of God's creation, but in doing so, they're going to miss out on the inheritance God wants to give them, which is so much better. And just as a side, all right, it's just interesting to note here that in the Greek, when it says the kingdom of Christ and God, the two nouns, Christ and God, are preceded by one article. And from what I've read, this is a way of designating one person by the use of two terms, or at least placing two terms on equal footing. Christ equals God. I'm always surprised at the Bible believers who deny the deity of Christ. Well, all right, so the next outcome is the wrath of God in verse 6. He said, let no one deceive you with empty words. How strong is peer pressure? And how easy is it for us to be talked into something we want to believe? Oh, God doesn't really mind. It's just a small sin. It's a sinlet. It's not like you're murdering someone. Are you sure that's in the Bible? Oh, that was just cultural. So-and-so does it. You have to really experience sin in order to feel the grace of God. And so on and so forth. Empty words. You know, this also could have been the early stages of antinomianism. There's a big word to impress your friends. It means against law. Okay, so it was a type of Gnosticism that would develop later, and they believed that no matter how you lived, well, the physical couldn't corrupt the spiritual. And they used the illustration. If you drop a diamond into sewage and you leave it there for 1,000 years, well, you can just take it out and rinse it off and the sewage can't hurt it. And they said, well, that's the same with your soul. Look, just about anyone can come up with a nice illustration that's creative and clever. The problem is they are just empty words without biblical substance. How many people out in the world are convinced of things by empty words? Look, don't let anyone, whether it's your friends, family, or neighbors, all right, whether it's your teacher, tutor, or professor, whether it's your preacher, priest, or pastor, deceive you by saying that you can practice sin and not suffer God's wrath. Now, there have been a number of groups throughout history who have held to some form of antinomianism. You can even find people today who will say things like Paul fought in Romans chapter 6, verse 1. Are we to continue in sin so that grace may increase? Because someone might say, well, God likes to forgive and I like to sin. This is a great gig. Well, the sons of disobedience, a term he used back in 2:2, those are, you know, all those who refuse to obey their Creator. They stand in contrast to the beloved children of God, chapter 5, verse 1, who are children of light, verse 8. Now, you find some people will try to say, well, the God of the New Testament is the God of love, in contrast to the cranky God of wrath in the Old Testament. There's only one God, and he's the same in both Testaments. God exhibits both love and wrath. As you can see, we are definitely warned about the wrath of God in the New Testament. So the question is, which one of those do you want to be the recipient of? God's love or God's wrath? Now, we then have the obvious conclusion that we should come to in verses 7 and 8. Therefore, do not be partakers with them. Who in their right mind would say, oh, I don't want the kingdom inheritance, but I do want the wrath of God? He then said, you were formerly darkness. Christians really need to remember their past before they found salvation in Christ. How could we ever think of going back? I mean, who likes the idea of being in the dark and stumbling around? But it's more than that, though, because Paul said we were darkness. And think about it. What is the last thing you want to do after you get all cleaned up and put on some new white clothing? Jump back in the mud and the muck and the mire. Unless, of course, you're a pig, because they seem to like that. Well, Paul, he went on to say, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth. Well, that's what we're going to look at next week. Light and darkness. Do we want to go back to what we were? The sons of disobedience participating in the unfruitful deeds of darkness. And if so, are we ready to accept the consequences of that lifestyle? The wrath of God with no kingdom inheritance. No, we are children of light, and we must walk in that way. All Christians mess up from time to time. Becoming like Jesus, that's a process. The problem is if we go on sinning willfully, Hebrews 10:26. In other words, we've just given ourselves over to it, and we're no longer struggling to get it out of our lives. Think about it like this. In the early days of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, he came up with the 10 most wanted lists with people who have committed some of the most egregious crimes, but they've never been caught. And so these people, they're very dangerous to the public. And so they're often referred to as public enemy number 1, 2, 3. They need to be caught. They need to be removed from the public as soon as possible. Well, Paul, he made a list here. He singled out some of the offenses that are to be captured and excluded from the life of the Christian because they are enemies of walking in the light and producing the fruit of the light. So these are things that we may need to put on our personal 10 most wanted list to get rid of. The Christian life is a challenging life. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. There are things we have to give up in order to live for Him. He has called us to be His holy ones. And so the idea that, you know, I can be a Christian and I can go by that name and just live like the world, well, according to Paul, that is a terrible error. Christianity, it's not just about what we are saved from, spiritual death and hell, but also about what we are saved for, a life of holiness and obedient faith as we strive to be like Jesus and get the sin out of our lives, a life that is trying to honor the Lord and make Him proud. So how important is producing fruit, the fruit of light? Everyone produces fruit of some kind. What's it going to be for you and me? Christians living in Rolla, Missouri in 2024. Let's all go home and take inventory of our fruit.